Hello, travelers. Welcome to the Muende Ueno podcast, season two. As you know by now, if you've listened to season one, Muende Ueno podcast translates to go well in several Zambian languages and is used to bestow travel mercies on people who are traveling on a journey. This podcast aims to inspire you not just to explore your city, but your country, your continent, and beyond. And in each episode, I speak to people who are doing just that. I am your host, and my name is Mazuba Kapambwe. I would like to thank everybody who listened to season one of the podcast, especially the guests and also the sponsors who are on. And speaking of guests, I'm really excited to be launching season two with the very first guest from season one. So if you listened from season one, you may remember her. I am talking to Winnie, aka the traveling storyteller. Hi, Winnie. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you, Mazuba, for having me back. It's always a pleasure to chat on Muende Bueno. You're doing a fantastic job with the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And you have been traveling a lot since we last spoke, which was almost, it was about a year and like maybe a year and 2 months ago. And if you've been following Winnie on social media, you know that she did a recent trip with several other influencers and bloggers and vloggers to Togo. So Winnie, where else have you been in the last year?
Practically the African continent, South Africa, Lesotho. I went to the Chalive Water Festival in Ghana. Mm-hmm. I hosted a couple of girls' trips, not a lot. And then I went to, where else did I go? Swaziland. Mm-hmm. Oh, they said we should call it Eswatini. I'm sorry.
Yes.
Eswatini. And I finally finished off with another group trip to Zambia.
Awesome. Awesome. And that's what we're going to be speaking about in today's episode. We're going to be talking about group trips, specifically group trips that are all female led, because we're kicking off the season two of Muende Ueno podcast in Women's Month. So March is known around the world as Women's Month, a Women's History Month. So, Winnie, I've been seeing your all female group trips sell out on Twitter like within minutes. So congratulations on that.
Thank you. Thank you.
Now, can you tell myself and the listeners why you started offering specifically all female group trips? So what was the inspiration behind it, and what's the first country that you organized the all female group travel trips to?
All right. I started organizing girls trips sometime in 2017, mm-hmm. mainly because a large percentage of my audience is women that are passionate about travel. Mm-hmm. And some of them requested me to organize trips for them because they don't like traveling alone. Mm-hmm. So I was actually inspired by their passion to start hosting these trips. You can tell by how passionate they are by, like you said, how fast the trips sold out. Mm-hmm. Yes. And my first trip was in my home country. Mm-hmm. I wasn't really quite comfortable with taking people outside the country mm-hmm. until I knew the logistics and the responsibilities and the commitment that comes with hosting girls' trip mm-hmm. outside mm-hmm. The country. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Awesome. Now, since then, you mentioned previously you did an all-girls trip to Zambia.
Yes.
Yes. And how did that go? Like, where in Zambia did you go?
We went to Lusaka, and we actually all met in Lusaka, and then we proceeded to go to Livingstone, mm-hmm. and we lived our best life. Livingstone, other than being expensive, is one of the best places to go as a solo traveler and even as a group, because it caters for all kinds of travelers. Mm-hmm. If you're an adrenaline junkie, there's, in fact, 90% of the activities that are in Livingstone, to the best of my knowledge, are for the adrenaline junkies, from jumping off, bungee jumping, skydiving, mm-hmm. microlight flight, swimming mm-hmm. in the devil's pool. So basically it's an adrenaline junkie heaven, but there's also the waterfalls, one of the seven wonders, I think.
Yes.
And also the people, Zambians are really, really friendly, and Livingstone is just beautiful. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we really had a great time.
I'm so glad you had a great time in my country, Zambia. And speaking of which, so Victoria Falls, so the region that Livingstone is in, which is the southern province of Zambia, that's actually where my mom comes from.
Oh, really?
So that's like my second village My second home.
Oh, okay, 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 cool. You're from such a cool town. I wish my mom came from that. Sorry, mom.
So, you know, usually when, you know, a lot of us have, I guess, prior experience, and I'm sure even my listeners will agree with at least attempting to plan group trips with our friends. And, you know, it usually starts the same way. I've seen like memes on Twitter where it's like, you know, you plan a trip and then like you send out, even create a WhatsApp group and everyone is excited. And then, you know, you're uploading in your suggestions there. And then, you know, 30 of your friends are like, yes, let's travel. And then you start seeing now as the date gets closer to pay the deposit, people start dropping out and saying, no, you know, I didn't get paid this month, or no, you know, I gotta pay my baby mama or whatever. But like, there's always a reason. And most people, like, after that point, you know, give up and they're like, you know what, I'm either just going to be a solo traveler, or I'm just going to like never, you know, organize a group trip. So I wanted to ask you, like, what are the benefits that a group travel trip provides that a solo trip cannot, you know, fulfill?
Okay, first of all, I'd like to say that I've seen those jokes. Someone actually said in planning trips with black people is an extreme sport. And then another one said that if you keep waiting for your friends to travel with, you're going to be waiting forever.
Exactly.
Anyway, I'm a huge advocate of solo travel. Anyone that knows me, you know that. Mm-hmm. However, the group trips cater for travel lovers that are just, they've experienced the same thing. They've tried to plan trips with their friends because they're really passionate about traveling, but their friends are not just into it. Mm-hmm. So they end up getting disappointed. But they've also tried solo traveling once and they found out it's not their thing. And these group trips are the perfect opportunity for them to meet like-minded travelers that are not all about travel talk 24/7, mm-hmm. and then it never happens. Mm-hmm. And the good thing about these trips is that they meet people who are as passionate as they are. So they end up forming friendships and even end up planning separate trips after the initial group trip. I have seen people that I've organized trips for become friends. Even they're not friends with me, but they're friends and they travel together. Mm-hmm. So I feel like it creates a really good network for you to meet people who are like-minded.
Agreed. And also, I think there's also like the element of safety. I think when you're a solo traveler, especially a female solo traveler, there's some countries where, you know, maybe it's not advisable for you to go out alone at night, especially if you're not very familiar with the city. But if you're traveling with a group, you know, you feel like, you know, there's places that you can go together because there's power in numbers, you know?
Absolutely, I agree with that. When I travel solo, I have to be alert all the time. But you see, when you're with a group of other women or even other men, you're comfortable because you know these people and you know that at least there's someone to take care of me, mm-hmm. if something goes wrong. Mm-hmm. Yeah, true.
Agreed. Now for 2020, you've got all female trips planned to Cape Town, to Mount Kenya, and to Namibia, which all sound really exciting. And they're all trips that I would love to go on, specifically Mount Kenya, because we need to even do an episode when you come back from this trip, because I need to know exactly how it went. Because I feel like, I used to have these dreams of like, of climbing Mount Everest. And then I started watching these documentaries and I was like, never happening. Like, I can't even climb up my street without like hyperventilating, you know? So like, I know like you have to exercise for years for these things. But I want to know, like, why did you pick these particular countries and how do you make sure that you're including activities that are going to appeal to different types of personalities? Because you don't know necessarily the people that are going to sign up for these trips. Maybe they're adrenaline junkies. Maybe they're people that, you know, want to do more things like going to museums, for instance. So like, how do you strike a balance between planning like activities in those countries that can appeal to most travelers?
All right, so when I choose these destinations, mm-hmm. I usually give a priority to places that I have been to, because mm-hmm. I wouldn't feel comfortable going with people to places I've never been. I would love to experience those places alone or with my friends before I take people there. Mm-hmm. And I have been to most of these places that I chose, except summiting Mount Kenya and Mount Nyiragongo, which are basically hikes with mm-hmm. different views. So mm-hmm. I don't think that should be a problem. Mm-hmm. But some of these destinations, like Cape Town came as a request from a large number of my audience. So when I am curating these experiences, I usually make sure that I post that I post a well-detailed itinerary and all the activities involved. And I usually mention that this trip is for you if, because it entails lots of relaxation. Others demand fitness, like Mount Kenya and Mount Nyiragongo. I said, please, if you're not like if you're not fit, but if you're not up to the challenge of prepping and jogging and, you know, signing up for activities that will test your mental and physical fitness, then you shouldn't sign up. Like two days ago, I sent out an email to my email subscribers to a trip for Lamu, and I made sure I included a note saying that if you're aquaphobic, then this trip is not for you, because Lamu is an island and it involves a lot of boat transfers. So if you're aquaphobic, then it wouldn't be appropriate for you. So basically, I try to 90% include everything, every single detail in the itinerary, so that if someone signs up, they know what they're signing up for. And I also create groups for the people that have signed up to keep them updated. I usually communicate every week, this is the expectation, because the pictures that you see on Instagram, they usually come at some kind of cost. So this is what you should expect. And then if someone feels like changing their mind, then it's fine. But I think constant communication, and from the word go, I tell the group that this is what it is.
Awesome. And are there any, like, for some countries, like I know for Cape Town and other places, like there may be like bloggers, local bloggers who are already there. So like, do you reach out to those local bloggers, for instance, to get suggestions on like things to go? Or do you sometimes like meet up with some of the bloggers that you've become friends with over the years?
Yes, I love the travel community. I absolutely love it. Yesterday, I posted randomly something about Cape Town, and one of the travel bloggers from Cape Town told me, "Oh, you're coming." So we started talking on in the DMs, and I told her about my itinerary, and she was offering suggestions.
Nice.
And a place like Namibia, I've only been to Windhoek. So I reached out to a local travel blogger, and she helped me curate this trip. She's been really helpful, and she's actually coming for the trip to Namibia. She's based in Windhoek and Cape Town, so she's going to be coming with us. So the travel community is really helpful, and I've also helped people who've curated trips to Kenya. So I feel like we help each other, because you can't know everything, and there's always something new to discover.
Awesome.
Establish reliable connections in each destination.
That's great. Now, you know, there's a saying that, you know, the more women that you put in a room or in a space, the more likely there is to be conflict, which I don't necessarily think is true. But, you know, when people go on trips, whether you're male or female, whether it's a mixed group or whether it's like, you know, a group that has like one specific gender, you know, at some point, like, you're going to have, you know, maybe a little bit of conflict. Maybe someone doesn't want to eat at the restaurant that, you know, everybody else wants to eat at. Maybe someone doesn't want to spend 2 hours of their time in the museum and others do. So like, with that said, like, how do you, as the organizer of the trip, like, make sure that, I guess, there's like as less conflict as possible on a group trip? Like, do you tell people like in advance before, like, okay, so when we go on the trip, like, these are kind of like the ground rules of, like, you know, what's supposed to happen or how things should be handled? Or do you just like leave it to nature, I guess?
Well, first of all, thank God it's a myth. I believe when you bring people that have the same goal together, they tend to be on the same page most of the time. However, differences in opinion and how things should be done will always rise in any group, men or women. But it's easy to resolve such because, again, like I said, we're on the same page. The underlying factor that I always, it's usually the first thing I communicate, is to remind the ladies to be kind and compassionate when dealing with others. How do I do this? First, I usually schedule activity field days and free days, meaning that we don't have to constantly hang out together. This tends to bring balance. I mean, if you feel like today we did a lot of things and you want some time out to do that one thing that wasn't in the itinerary, you have a free day to do it. Secondly, I don't provide for all the meals, so that you have an opportunity to explore the local cuisines that are not catered for in the meal package, in the meals in the package. And then secondly, I always ask the ladies to raise any issues that they may have. The idea of keeping quiet to avoid conflict is something that some of us have.
Yeah.
It might end up ruining your trip, which you've paid money for. So I encourage the ladies to privately engage me before or during the trip if there's an issue. The third thing, thing is keeping time, that is one of the things that causes conflict. Disrespecting time is a factor that may cause conflict within the group because of inconveniencing others. Mm-hmm. I always remind the ladies not to be that person that can't keep time when there's activities planned for the day. Mm-hmm. And unforeseen events may occur, which might inconvenience us. It's not always perfect. So you have to be... to control your temper, don't be quick to anger because there's always an alternative solution. Mm-hmm. And finally, I always ask every member to remember that we are different and that travel exposes us to different people from different cultures and backgrounds who may not see things the way we see them. Mm-hmm. And it's important to be flexible in our thoughts, attitude, and to avoid being judgmental. These are basic principles, but they're very, very important when trying to avoid conflict.
I agree.
So yes, conflict always arises, but I always remind the ladies, we need to be flexible. This is something that has to be in us because it's not always going to be perfect.
Agree. And you don't always get the blessing, I guess, to travel with someone who is just, you know, who's like you. Like, I remember when I did I did the episode with my mom where I interviewed her for season one, and we're talking about how my mother and I are like so similar in like what we like and don't like, but the issue. We're travel besties, but then that's the thing, is like, you know, we travel, like the two of us, and we do our annual mother and daughter trips, you know, but like but then sometimes we're traveling with my other siblings, and now that's when the conflict comes in, where it's like they're very, you know, they're not similar to me and my mom, so now we have to like accommodate everybody on a trip because my older sisters, they don't want to be the ones in the museum for 2 hours. My mom and I want to be the one in the museum for 2 hours. So you have to find, you know, the compromise, and that's usually like what you're saying. You tell everybody, okay, you know what, we'll go and disperse, and in 2 hours or 3 hours we're gonna check in, we're gonna meet at this bookshop or this coffee shop, and everyone is happy because you get to do what you actually want to do on your own.
Actually, I think it brings balance when you do that, or set some free time for members to decide what they want to do. And I'd like to mention that I borrowed that idea of annual mother-daughter trip from you.
Oh, nice.
I did my trip. Yeah, I went for our first trip with my mom to the Kenyan coast.
Uh-huh.
It was amazing. My mom is sort of an introvert and an extrovert. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to mention that these trips tend to bring people with different personalities. Yeah, there's usually a conflict, but then again, there's always a balance.
Oh, that's so nice to hear. Now next I'm like thinking up, we need to do another episode with your mom and my mom, and like, you know,
oh my God, that would be awesome.
Get us all together. Maybe even do like a real life trip where my mom and I come to Kenya or something, you know. That would be great.
Yeah, you need to come to Kenya. You do need to come to Kenya.
Yes, I need to come to Kenya because the last time I was there, I was like, I was on a school trip. The second time I was in Kenya, I was like, I was transiting. So I was only there for like a day before going over to another country. So like in my adult life, I definitely need to plan a trip to Kenya. But that is coming up, for sure. I have that on my list. Let me just graduate, Winnie, okay? And then we can make this trip happen.
Okay, no pressure. No pressure at all,
Liza. Okay, now, we were just talking, you know, about like, balance and stuff. And, you know, like you mentioned previously in the episode and even in the previous season one episode that you are primarily a solo traveler. So how do you kind of like find time now that you're also planning all female group trips? How do you find time to balance like your own travels with group travel? Like, do you have a set number of like group travel trips that you've decided to do this year? And then you're like, I'm going to spend the other half of the year doing solo trips. Like, how do you navigate that? And then secondly, like, is there anything that you've learned? Has what you've learned from group travel affected how you travel as a solo traveler?
Oh, yeah, okay. I still travel solo. Mm-hmm. The group travels don't have an impact on my solo travels because at the end of every year, I plan a travel calendar and plan accordingly to this is when I'm going to do my solo travels, that, like spread out all my travels. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, I'm a little bit of both an introvert and an extrovert, mm-hmm. much on the extrovert side.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it balances out perfectly when I travel solo and with groups. What I have learned is that people are different. People are very different.
Mm-hmm.
People come from different backgrounds, like I said earlier, and we're all raised differently. So I have learned to accommodate other people and to put other people first, because initially I used to be, when you travel solo, I don't know about other solo travelers, but it makes you kind of self-centered, independent.
Yes.
Thinking about yourself, you're putting yourself first. You don't care about other people because you're on your own. You're mm-hmm. always looking out for yourself. Mm-hmm. But when you travel with other people, you learn to be compassionate, gentle, kind, and basically empathetic, because you are taking care of other people, you're taking care of each other. So yes, it's taught me to be more compassionate and caring.
Mm-hmm. Well, those are always great. It's yes. always great to have those, you know, those attributes, to be compassionate. And because I remember listening to a podcast, Women Who Travel, a podcast that I love, and one of the host of the podcast, like, she travels for work because she's an editor at the magazine, and she's talking about her husband and how they took a trip together, and then, like, traveling together, she realized, like, how when she travels solo, like, she doesn't really, like, have, like, she doesn't really stop to eat much. Like, she can go for, like, hours, and then her husband is, like, always hungry. So when she travels with him, like,
so
they have to, like,
really, really, I forget to eat. But when there's a time I got into a disagreement with one of the ladies because she really wanted to eat, and uh-huh. I kept telling her, no, just wait, you know, I hadn't really thought about it.
Yeah,
I hadn't thought, no, we are different and my body and hers are different, so of course if she's hungry, she got really pissed. She yelled at me when I was doing, like, I went to a corner and thought about it, I was like, yeah. So I realized I was making the decisions based on what I felt. Because I kept telling her, no, wait, just wait, be patient, we're almost here. I made that decision based on how I felt. I really didn't think about her. It's because if I did think about her, I would have said, no, listen, driver, you need to stop, let's go, let's grab something to eat right here and now, you get.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt like, I felt like she was pushing me, but when, in retrospect, when I thought about it much later, it's like,
great.
Yes.
Now, before I let you go, do you have any last minute tips for people who are planning a group trip, apart from the ones you shared in terms of, like, conflict and stuff? Like, how early should you start planning for a group trip? How early should you get people's deposits? How early should you be emailing people reservations and stuff for, like, hotels or Airbnbs?
Alright, for local destinations, if it's a local destination, it's not going to be really expensive.
Mm-hmm.
I usually give my audience maybe 4 or 5 months. But if it's countries outside your local where you're based, I usually give them like 9 to 10 months to plan.
Mm-hmm.
So you announce the trips 9 to 10 months in advance. Like Cape Town, we're going in November. I announced the trips in January. Was it January? I think it was in January.
Mm-hmm.
And then another tip I'd say is experience these destinations first before inviting others to experience them with you. And if you don't have the opportunity to experience these destinations, then work with a local, not a local tour operator, but a local travel blogger or travel content creator, because most of them tend not to be out to make profits, but they're out to, they love traveling.
Mm-hmm.
So for them, they'll be giving you genuine travel tips, things to do, where to eat, where to go. And generally local travel content creators will not, I forgot what I wanted to say, but yes, so experience these destinations or work with a local travel content creator. And when you eventually start planning these events, remember that communication is a very, very significant part of your role. Be in constant communication with members of the group. It really goes a long way. I don't know, maybe I'm obsessed with communication because the trip that I'm planning over Easter, I've been updating the ladies every single week. When I book the accommodation, like, listen guys, the accommodation is sorted, here are the pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Because I want them to not forget.
Yeah.
I don't want them to forget, and then they come with different expectations. And when I book the flight, if there's flights in the package, like, hey, listen, here's the list of your names.
Agreed. Now, lastly, can you share with us any future trips coming up? If there's any wait list that people can sign up to? Because I know most of your trips are fully booked for now. But for people that maybe want to get on the wait list, like, how can they do that?
My social media networks all have the username just Rioba.
Mm-hmm.
And my website is just rioba.com.
Okay.
There's this assumption that I just host Kenyans, but I usually host women from all over the world. 2020 trips have women coming from Zambia, Nigeria, South Africa, and Denmark. And you can sign up for my upcoming trips by subscribing to my website, justriova.com, so that you'll be the first one to know any upcoming trips. And I also share travel tips and breakdown of costs for my solo travels to different countries. Yeah.
Awesome. So much great content on Winnie's site and also on her Instagram and on her Twitter as well. You did a recent thread on Zambia, which was amazing. And I'm sure it got not just people from outside of Zambia, but even people in Zambia themselves. It got them inspired to travel, which is great. And that's like, you know, that's the purpose of travel, is to get people to like, you know, get out more, even if it's in their own country or if it's in their own city. So that was awesome. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Winnie, for being on the Mwende Wino podcast again. I look forward to hosting you very, very soon, especially when you come back from Mount Kenya, so we can hear all the details about the preparations and the actual summit as well. So on your next travels, I wish you well, or, you know, as we say in Zambia, Mwende Wino.
Asante sana, thank you so much. I'm looking forward to coming back to the podcast to share the trip to Mount Kenya.
Awesome. Zikomo. Now, for the rest of you listeners, please subscribe to the podcast. We're on the following platforms. We're on Spotify, we're on SoundCloud, we're on Google Podcasts, and we're on Anchor as well. We're on Twitter and Instagram at Mwende Wino and Mwende Wino Podcast for Instagram. So catch me next time in another exciting episode of Mwende Wino.